So when we plan sermon series, we tend to plan 2 to 4, 6 months at a time. And there are times when Pastor David and I will talk on Monday and say, what were we thinking when we chose the scripture for this coming Sunday? Like, what does it have to do with anything? And we used to give Pastor Jason Biasi, our former pastor, who actually will be here on the 31st preaching all three services, so please come and hear from Jason again. We're excited to have him back. But we used to give Jason a hard time and say, Jason, you just pick the most obscure passages just for the sake of picking obscure passages. Like, you know, what's the takeaway? And he's like, I don't know what the takeaway is, but wouldn't it be fun to preach on this passage? And we're like, no, you have a weird idea of what fun is. And sometimes David and I think, no, we're somehow still carrying that mantle that Jason secretly left with us. But I will say that this series in particular, this More to the Story series, where we've been looking at familiar Old Testament stories, and we'll move, we have a few more weeks in this. There are times when it is apparent, because of what is happening in the lives of individuals in this church, or what God might be calling us to as a church, what God might be doing in our midst, or what might be happening in our nation, our culture, the world around us. There are times when we just feel like God, you know, it's one of those times where you look at him and you just say, hey, well played. You knew exactly what you were doing. And I believe that's true of the series that we've been in, you know, beginning with Jonah, and then going to Esther and Noah, and looking last week at the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the way that brings to light the work that God is doing in this world, and the work that God has been doing in this world for a long time, and the ways that God has used people. You know, Noah, while there are so many questions around the flood, we come away from that with this understanding that Noah, his name means comfort, that he's a comfort to the Lord in a time when no one wants anything to do with the Lord, but Noah is there and he's faithful, and God gives him opportunity to be comfort to humanity. He's the way that God would rescue the world at that time. And then last week we look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and their willingness to go into the furnace to answer this question that King Nebuchadnezzar asks: who is this God who will deliver you from my hand? And the fact that we're living in a world right now that is asking that question, who is this God? And that if you are a person of faith, in the way that you live your life, you are answering that question, this God is. And we're challenged in that. We're challenged in the way that we live and steward our lives. You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said this: hey, we believe the God of Israel can save us. The one true God can save us, deliver us from whatever you're going to do. And then they offer these three courageous words: but even if God chooses not to do that, we are willing to suffer whatever you're going to throw at us, because we are not willing to settle for less than who God is to us. This morning we have an opportunity in the same way to look at a story that for many is a familiar story, the story of Ruth. And in this story, we are reminded, or maybe you need to hear for the first time, that God is at work in your life, and that God is at work in this world in the most difficult and seemingly impossible situations. God is still working. And maybe you need to be reminded of that because you are walking through something incredibly difficult right now as a church, as the church, not that Boone UMC is the church, but we are part of the church, the body of Christ collectively with the church in this world, that we need to be reminded that in the midst of impossible situations we are facing in our country right now, that God is still at work. Or maybe you need to hear that for the first time, that in your life right now, whatever you are facing, know that God is at work. And I love this story. We're going to look in particular at Naomi and Ruth. There are other characters in the story, but we're going to focus on those two. That maybe, like Naomi, God is calling you to simply be on the receiving end of what God is doing. And that's not a bad thing. But maybe, like Ruth, God is calling you to be a part of what God is doing. to be a part of the way that God is working in impossible situations and in difficult circumstances. That maybe God seeks to do that work in this world through you. So with that in mind, let's turn to Ruth chapter 4. We're not very far into the Old Testament. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, keep going, past Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, before 1 Samuel, you have Ruth, this tiny little story sandwiched in there. So we'll look at Ruth chapter 4. We'll read verses 13 through 22. If you would, in honor of the reading of God's word, please stand with me. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse and the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab the father of Nahshon. Nahshon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David. This is the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. So anytime there is a birth announcement, you know, whether that's a Facebook birth announcement or I don't know if people actually send birth announcements in the mail anymore. But behind every announcement of a birth, there's a story. You know, if you had time to sit down with that couple who just welcomed a child into the world, then you get to hear the story maybe of the pregnancy, or maybe it was difficult for them to conceive, or maybe the delivery process, maybe, you know, the husband, like, who was ready to go and be there for his wife, maybe he ended up fainting like 30 seconds in, you know, and he wasn't there at all. There's a story behind every birth. There are things that parents remember. I could tell you a story about each of the births of each of our children. Scripture is no different. The way that the book of Ruth, the story of Ruth, ends with this short little genealogy, beginning with Perez and ending with David, seems, as you read the whole story, it seems like, what's the point in that, other than to just make sure there's a birth announcement here at the end because this baby has been born? But there's a whole huge story wrapped up in these verses. And then if you were to turn to the beginning of Matthew and the genealogy that Matthew lists there, which is much more extensive than this, because he starts at the beginning and ends with Jesus, you find that this is, in fact, part of a larger story. But the role that this story of Ruth, these four small chapters, you at a fairly easy pace could sit down and read the story of Ruth in about 15 minutes. And I would encourage you to do so. If you're not familiar with the whole story, I would invite you to spend time with it. Read it. Go home this afternoon. Tomorrow, if you need something to read in your quiet time, read the story of Ruth and ask the Lord, where do I find myself in this story? But here's this small little story sandwiched between the book of Judges and 1 Samuel. Now, maybe we're a little fuzzy on Judges, but 1 Samuel, we start to move toward David, and that's maybe a story we're more familiar with, and we're gonna get into David in the weeks to come. But sandwiched in between these two stories is this story of a woman named Ruth. And it takes place during Israel's history in the time known as the time of the Judges. And it was about a 400-year period. And it's a dark period in the history of Israel. You see, when you get to the beginning of Judges, you think, wow, God has accomplished the impossible. You know, things are looking really good. So let's go ahead and roll the credits. God has brought his people into the promised land after their 40 years of wandering in the desert, which came after God delivering them from slavery in Egypt, where they were enslaved for hundreds of years. The people ended up in Egypt because of the work that God did through Joseph. And if you were to continue to back up, you go all the way back to Abraham, who shows up in Genesis. And God makes this problem, God makes a promise. Sometimes we feel like God just creates problems in our lives. God makes a promise to Abraham. Abraham is a nomad. He's an old man. He's married, has no children. His wife is barren. They're not able to have children. But he makes this promise to Abraham. Abraham, you will be the father of a nation. And through you, all the peoples of the earth will be blessed. That's a heck of a promise to a guy that not only does not have children, but is unable, he and his wife, to have children. So the story begins to unfold. Abraham and his wife Sarah do, in fact, have a child. And this child grows and has a child. And so we get to Joseph. And Joseph is the reason that God's people are able to come to Egypt during famine. And in Egypt, God's people continue to grow until they are so numerous that the Pharaoh says, hold on, we have got to do something about these people who have become so numerous. Because what if they decide, what if they realize how many of them there are, they might overthrow us, so let's enslave them. So for hundreds of years, God's people are enslaved in Egypt. And they get to this point in their slavery where they just cry out to the Lord. They can't handle the slavery anymore. They cry out in their agony. And in Exodus, the beginning of Exodus, we hear that God hears their cry. And he remembers his promise to them, that he's moved by their crying out, and so he begins to move on their behalf. Moses enters the scene. The people are taken out of Egypt in dramatic fashion. They're taken out of Egypt, but they have a hard time getting the Egypt out of them. They have a hard time getting away from this life of slavery that they've been used to living. And that's there's so much of our story wrapped up in that. That God might free us from something, but we have a hard time letting go of that thing that God is calling us out of. So for 40 years, the people wander in the desert and they learn that God is indeed faithful, that God is indeed good, that God has called them his own, and God has said, you are going to be my people, and this is what it looks like to be my people. And then you have the Ten Commandments and the law that God gives to Moses. And then armed with that, an identity and a purpose and a way to live, they follow Joshua into the promised land. And in the promised land, they're given the best of the best, like the prime real estate in that part of the world. And so God establishes them as a people. But it says at the beginning of the book of Judges that they forget. They forget who they are as God's people. You can make note of this and turn there later. Judges chapter 2, beginning with verse 6. After Joshua had dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of the land, each to his own inheritance that, you know, had been set out for them. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance. It goes on to say that after that whole generation had been gathered up to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. It says that they followed and worshipped other gods. They provoked the Lord to anger. They were in great distress as a result. Moving on to verse 16, then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. They would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshipped them. Unlike their fathers, they quickly turned from the way in which their fathers had walked, the way of obedience to the Lord's command. And so it begins this cycle of the people of God. God says, I don't want them to have a king. Instead, I will raise up judges. And the judges I will protect, and I will walk with them, and I will counsel them, and I will tell them how to lead the people. I will be faithful to them. And so there might be a period of time where the people rally to the judges, and they hear the words that are being given to them, and their memory might be sparked. But then they continue to sin. They continue to worship lesser gods. They get caught up in other things and they forget. And because God can't contend with our sin, he allows them to be overtaken. And then they cry out. And so another judge is raised up. And it just, there's this cycle of unfaithfulness and the people that God had been so faithful to bring them out of captivity. Well, in the midst of this, there's this tiny little story that takes place. This woman named Ruth. And it seems really insignificant if you hold it up next to Judges and then get into 1 Samuel. You're like, well, I don't understand the point of this little story. You know, it's like the little 5-minute animated clip that happens at the beginning of a movie between the previews and the actual feature film. You know, it didn't really serve any purpose. It has nothing to do with the trailers you've just watched, and it doesn't really have anything to do with the film that you're about to watch, but it's an opportunity for some creative people to show their creativity off, and maybe there wouldn't be another way for them to get to do that. So there's this little 5-minute spot where there's a cute film that we all laugh at and we like, and then we're on to the next thing. And what was the point of it, other than to bring a smile to our faces? And it would be easy to look at Ruth and ask the same question. This is like, you know, something to do in intermission, right, between this main feature, Judges, the unfaithfulness of God's people, and then when God begins to raise up kings for his people. Except for the fact that the story of Ruth shows us God's ability to work in impossible situations. You know, if you've followed the story of God with God's people, beginning with Abraham, all the way to Joseph, all the way to Moses, to Joshua, and entering the promised land. And they've now been given the land that God promised to Abraham generations before. Not only are you going to be the father of a nation, but here's the land I'm going to give you. The best is what I have for you. You follow that story, and then they're given that land, and you almost immediately begin to see their unfaithfulness. Try to put yourself in the place of God, who has been so faithful to these people for so long. And they repay his faithfulness with unfaithfulness, with worshiping lesser gods. Like, I wonder if God ever reached a point where he said, I wish I hadn't taken the flood off the table. Like, I wish I hadn't promised that that would never happen again, because now would be a great time to send another flood. This situation seems impossible. Every person I raise up to lead these people, they don't listen to. And then the judge ends up dying, and then the people are right back in sin. What did I expend that effort and that energy for? Why did I bring them out of Egypt? They've allowed themselves to wind up in situations that seem impossible. God's heart breaks for us when we enter into suffering like that, when we allow ourselves to continue to live lives of suffering that we've created. God's heart breaks for us when you live suffering that you haven't created. But there's something, I believe, that happens in the heart of God when he looks at suffering that we've created for ourselves and he says, that's not the life that I have for you. But rather than leaving us in it, God is always working in the midst of it. This is the story of Ruth. So Naomi, the beginning of the story of Ruth, if you were to go to Ruth chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, they're placed in Israel's history. We know, you know, when this happened. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and 2 sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi. There we have Naomi. And the names of his 2 sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. That seems smart. It seems wise. There's a famine in the land of God's people. Elimelech, who cares for his family, hears that they have food in Moab and so decides it's probably better for my family to go and live there. They'll be provided for. Only when they get there, verse 3, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her 2 sons. Her 2 sons married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her 2 sons and her husband. Naomi is in the worst possible situation that she can be in. I mean, this is, for God's people, for her to be in the situation she is, this is worst case scenario. Naomi has left with her family, left suffering to try to find a place of peace and to be cared for, while the land recovers so that then they might return. They've left this place of suffering. She's with her husband, has her two sons. Things are good. Her husband dies. That's not good for a woman at this time. But she still has her two sons. They're charged then with caring for their mother. They marry Moabite women. So there's still a possibility that Naomi would be cared for, that her family lineage would carry on. Her sons, have children. Those children care for her. She's the matriarch of the family. She's revered. She's cared for, except for the fact that her two sons die. So now she is in a land that is not her own, with people that are not her own, with no one to care for. This is an impossible situation for a woman at this time. Like, for those of you who have a spouse who travels, it's difficult when they leave town. I know that it is for my wife, Piper, but it's not an impossible situation. It's a difficult situation. I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not an impossible situation. Sometimes when I talk to her on the phone, maybe it sounds a little impossible, but difficult situation. For Naomi, this is an impossible situation. She has no hope. She has no one to turn to, nothing to cling to. And so Naomi begins to say, you know what? This is God's judgment on me. She begins to believe that, to understand that because God is righteous, because God is holy, she and her husband left the place that God had called them to be, home, the place that God had given them. They left there. This is God's judgment on her as a result. She loses her husband. She loses her sons. We think, hey, you know what? She has her daughters-in-law. Except for the fact that her daughters-in-law are Moabite women. Now, in the book of Judges, the Moabites are a group of people who are accused of being responsible, partly responsible, because there are a number of groups of people who are responsible for this, being partly responsible for leading God's people astray, for offering them different gods. Hey, what about this God? What about this God? What if you worship this way? What if you worship this way? What if you live life the way we're living life? And God's people are like, yeah, fine. Like, it's like going through a buffet. We'll just add some of this and some of this and some of this and some of this. So the Moabites are partly responsible for the lack of faithfulness of God's people. And if you go back even further, we begin to see why there's tension that exists between the people of Israel, God's people, and the Moabites. If you go back even further to the story of Lot, we learn that after Lot and his daughters flee from Sodom and Gomorrah, that his daughters kind of realize they're in a bad situation. You know, we have no men around us except for our father, and so they make a decision that leads to children, both of them. One of those children is the father of the Moabites. So out of a kind of a messed up situation, mixed up relationship between Lot and his daughters, children come from that, Moabites. So already opposed to God's people, already in opposition to God's people. These are the daughters-in-law that Naomi has. They're brokenhearted. Naomi is brokenhearted. They have no sons to offer Naomi. Naomi hears that there is that the famine is being lifted in Judah. So she says, you know what, the only thing I have to do is go back. Maybe there I can find someone to care for me. So she says to Orpah and Ruth, you know what, I appreciate your faithfulness, but please, I have nothing to offer you. I have no sons for you. Even if I got married now and had children, by the time they grow up, you're going to be too old to marry. So there's no hope for you. My future is bleak. God has turned his back on me. Have you ever felt that way? It doesn't matter how I pray. It doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter how much I open the scripture. It doesn't matter how much I have people pray for me. It feels like God has turned his back on me. God has forgotten my plight, or my plight exists because God has said, you know what? I'm going to just keep pressing the hand out. I just want you to feel the weight of the distress in your life, the life that you're living. I want you to feel how heavy it is. You know, God's not doing this. He's not lifting the weight off. He's just making it heavier. This is what Naomi feels like, to the point that when she gets back to Judah, she says, you know what, change my name. I want my name to better reflect my situation because God has forgotten me. So Orpah kind of comes to her senses. She's like, yeah, you know what, you don't have kids. Like, you're not pregnant. You don't have a prospect of having sons. So I love you, but I'm going to go back to my own people. But Ruth makes this statement. But Ruth replied, chapter 1, verse 16, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. This is an unbelievable pledge of faithfulness. Naomi has clearly outlined for these women, this is the life I am living. You don't want to have anything to do with me right now. My future is bleak. My outlook is bleak. Things are not going to improve for you if you stay with me. All that is ahead of me, I feel like, is darkness. Orpah hears that and says, yeah, I don't really want anything to do with that. Ruth says, okay, grabs her hand and says, let's go. I'm with you. You know the expression, misery loves company? We tend to take that to mean that misery loves company in the sense that if you're miserable, you don't really care to be happy. You just want other people around you to be miserable. Like, you just don't want the other person or anyone around you to be joyful when you are in a place of misery, because that just makes our misery look all the worse. But if other people around you are miserable, like if you've worked to make people around you miserable, then you're like, well, at least no one is happy. But I wonder if we began to think differently about that. And so because of that, misery loves company. Because of that, how often have you avoided stepping into someone's mess with them? How often have you looked at the pain of someone else or the life that someone else is living, a desperate situation that they may be living in, and said, I'm good. Things are going fairly well for me right now. I don't really want to have anything to do with that because I don't want to mess up what I got going on right here. What if we begin to understand that differently? What if it wasn't that misery loves company in the sense that if you're miserable, you just make other people around you miserable so people don't want anything to do with you? What if from the outside we looked at that and said, it's not that misery loves company, misery needs company. Misery needs company. Ruth had an out. Ruth could have chosen to go back and hit reset on her life. I'm sure that she would have found a Moabite husband and married and had children and been cared for. But there is something in her. Something in her heart that breaks for the plight of Naomi. There's something in her that connects her to Naomi to the point that she says, Naomi, I will not leave your side. I will go where you go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. What a pledge Ruth makes to Naomi. That she considers her own life and says, you know, that's not as important to me as it is walking with Naomi through her suffering and through her pain. As it is being faithful to this woman. She's not my people. Her God is not my God. We don't share the same culture. We don't share the same customs. In fact, in a lot of ways, we should be enemies. The death of her son should have been my ability to get out of the situation. And yet there is something in Ruth that looks a whole lot like Jesus. We'll talk about generations later. That if anyone would follow me, he must take up his cross. He must deny himself, take up his cross, and be willing to follow me. In an impossible situation, with the most unlikely of candidates, God is at work. In a time in the history of Israel that looks desperate, destitute, no hope for the future of God's people, God is at work. It makes me wonder, in the midst of whatever situation you happen to be living in right now, whatever desperate situation, whatever desperate times where you're not sure what tomorrow is going to look like, you're not sure what next week's going to look like, or next month is going to look like, you're not sure what the end of the pay period is going to look like, are you willing to believe that perhaps God is at work in your impossible situation? Because God is not limited by our situation. God is not bound when we think things are impossible. God does his best work in impossible. God's vision for the future, for your future, is not blurred. God's vision for the future of people around you is not blurred. God's ability is not limited by your desperate situation or the desperate situations of those around you. So regardless of where you find yourself in this story, my life is more like Naomi right now, or maybe not. Maybe God is calling you to be more like Ruth. Are you willing to believe that God is at work in your situation? That perhaps there's somebody that God is going to bring into your life to walk with you through the difficulty. Or perhaps God is calling you to walk alongside someone else whose situation right now is incredibly difficult. Because God's ability to work and accomplish is not limited. So through the course of a relationship with Naomi, Ruth meets and marries Boaz, who is akin to Elimelech. So an Israelite man, again, marries this Moabite woman. And Ruth, who was barren for the 10 years that they were in Moab while she was married to Naomi's son, Ruth, it says in the passage that we read in chapter 4, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The son named Obed, who was the father of Jesse, who would go on to be the father of David, who is the greatest king that Israel ever saw. David, whose line and throne were established so that generations later another baby would be born to a woman named Mary and a man named Joseph. And that baby would be Jesus. So when you read the genealogy of Jesus at the beginning of Matthew, you see this woman's name in there. Obed, whose mother was Ruth. God accomplished the amazing in an impossible situation with the most unlikely person, because Ruth was willing to be faithful to Naomi, to enter into her suffering with her and walk with her. And as a result, God blessed Ruth. And as a result of that, God blessed humanity. Now, what does this look like for us now? Let me invite our worship team to come back up. Ruth had compassion on Naomi because she was paying attention to her. Because she was paying attention to her, she felt concern for Naomi. Because she felt concern for her, because she had compassion on her, she was willing to enter into Naomi's plight with her. The question is, are you paying attention to the lives of people around you? I'm afraid in a lot of ways we are not paying attention to the lives of people around us. We are paying attention to much more insignificant things. I read a headline this week that said two men walked off of a cliff in Encinitas, California because they were paying attention to their phone playing what? Pokemon Go. You're walking around trying to find pocket monsters that aren't real and not paying attention to the world around you. Now, I don't play Pokemon Go because I'm not trying to walk off a cliff, but I confess to you that there are things that I pay attention to that are much less important than the lives of people around me. Ruth had compassion on Naomi because she was paying attention to Naomi and her plight. Are you paying attention to the lives of people around you and asking God, where do you want me to be in this situation? How do you want me to enter into this suffering? How do you want me to enter into this difficult situation with this person? It begins in the context of relationship and paying attention to the people around you. And I believe right now more than ever in our country, if there is any healing that is going to take place, it is going to happen. God is going to do it through the context of relationship. Are you paying attention to the people around you? Are you paying attention to people not like you? In the course of what has happened over the past couple of weeks, have you picked up the phone and called someone who is not like you and said, I don't really know the words, but I'm sorry. Maybe is a good place to start. I want to know how you're feeling. I've had the opportunity to spend time with and talk with my dear friend, Reggie Hunt, who is a pastor at Cornerstone Summit. And to say, Reggie, there are words that I don't have, but I feel frustrated and I feel angry. Help me to understand. I want to pay attention to what you are dealing with. I want to pay attention to what it's like for you trying to lead a multi-ethnic church. What does that look like right now? Help me understand because I want to walk with you in this. Are you paying attention to the people around you? When was the last time that you asked the person bagging your groceries, hey, tell me your name? You bag my groceries a lot. Or the person that makes your favorite cup of coffee, or the person that brings your food to the table at the restaurant where you are a regular, do you know their name? Do you know their situation? Are you paying attention to the lives of people around you? Because I promise you that God is. And the church was created and is called to be the agent of change in this world. And we can't do it if we're not paying attention. Can't enter into impossible situations if we're not willing to see that they exist. God's heart is breaking for this world. God's heart is breaking for your life wherever you are right now. His heart beats for you. God is willing to raise up people to enter into your life. Are you willing to be raised up to enter into the life of others? Please stand and pray with me.